Hello and welcome into another episode of Locked on Wolves. Today on the show, diving deep into the Rudy Gobert defensive effect. How will the Timberwolves field a defense with both Karl Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert on the floor together? What are they most likely to do? What didn't work in Utah when it came to Rudy Gobert, especially in the playoffs? And how will Chris Finch and the Wolves overcome that? It's all coming on the show today. Welcome in. You are Locked on Wolves.
You are Locked on Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Today's episode is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. Bet Online, where the game starts. Happy Monday, everybody. Happy Independence Day in the United States, and hopefully you had a fantastic weekend. I will say, I'm recording this on 4th of July Eve, if you will, Sunday evening. Been a lot of fireworks going off in the neighborhood. I think we're clear now. It's late enough, but if there's any booms, bangs, whatever in the background, that's what's going on. Just thought I'd give that heads up here off the top. First of all, thank you for making Locked On Wolves your first listen every day. Locked On Wolves is free and available everywhere, including YouTube, as well as all of your favorite audio platforms. If you listen on Apple, Google, Spotify, or perhaps our friends over at Odyssey, anywhere you find podcasts, you should be able to find this show. You can also follow, of course, on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. And don't forget the T on that, Locked On T-Wolves, and at B Beacon with two B's, two E's, C-K-E-N. All right, so big weekend, obviously, in Timberwolves land. I did a bonus episode on Friday, so we had our normal episode that aired Friday morning, and then a bonus episode Friday afternoon, mere hours, really like 2 hours after the Rudy Gobert trade news happened. So if you missed my pretty immediate reaction, like I basically waited until we knew exactly the right number of picks that were going to Utah from Minnesota, recorded the episode, pretty raw reaction. You know, I've had a couple of days now to sift through this, you know, go back and watch some Gobert stuff from the end of his time at Utah. Well, not just the end, really the last 2, 3, 4 years at Utah. And, you know, some of the things that we're hearing, you know, depending on who you ask, even Jazz fans are pretty split on this, like Gobert's impact in the playoffs versus regular season. Was he really, quote unquote, played off the floor? What I want to unpack that a little bit today, like basically get a little bit in the weeds on what Utah did, what they weren't great at, and why it wasn't really Rudy's fault in most cases. And what the Timberwolves defense could look like now with Rudy Gobert on the floor with Karl Anthony Towns, especially in crunch time, right? I mean, that's when teams like to go small. They like to try and dictate terms by going small. And the Timberwolves, I think, are going to do something very different. I do want to point out the Timberwolves are on the right. They fielded a relatively small team last year, right? I mean, for the most part, the Timberwolves power forwards, whoever's playing the four, was generally a little bit undersized. Jared Vanderbilt, obviously, good athleticism, a solid rebounder for his size, good wingspan, but not super tall. Jaden McDaniels played a lot more three last year than his rookie season, but was more of a three than a four. When he played the four, he's a little bit undersized. The Timberwolves didn't have traditional sized fours next to Karl Anthony Towns. Now, suddenly, they're going to be one of the league's biggest lineups. And I bet if we look at, I have no idea if there's anywhere to find this without just manually adding this all up, but the collective wingspan of the Timberwolves expected starting five, there's almost no way that there's going to be a team that has a bigger wingspan. The Timberwolves are going to have a starting five, assuming it's D'Angelo Russell, Anthony Edwards, Jaden McDaniels, Karl Anthony Towns, and Rudy Gobert. It's a starting five where everybody is 6'4" or taller. D'Angelo Russell's a pretty big point guard, and everybody has a wingspan of 6'9 or greater, which is absolutely insane. A wingspan of 6'9 or greater for everyone in the lineup. Russell's 6'4 with a 6'9 wingspan. Obviously, we know Ant is big and continuing to grow. Same with Jaden McDaniels. I mean, Jaden McDaniels is like 6'10 at this point. Anthony Edwards is like 6'6, maybe 6'7. He came into the league at 6'4. So both he and McDaniels continue to grow. They have big wingspans, and we know Towns is a center, and Rudy Gobert is massive. He's got like a 7'6 wingspan, 7'7 wingspan, something crazy. The Timberwolves have just an enormous lineup at this point. And even the bench, I mean, Kyle Anderson's huge. He's like 6'9 with a massive wingspan himself. Torian Prince is a pretty big, versatile player. The Timberwolves, Jalen Noel has a decent wingspan for his size. He's not huge for a guard, but he may run some point next year. We don't know. I mean, take out Jordan McLaughlin and like everybody's, you know, kind of outsized for their position on the Timberwolves. So that's going to be that's obviously intentional, right? That it doesn't happen by accident. The Wolves know what they're looking for. Chris Finch wants to play big. He wants rangy, athletic players that can guard multiple positions, play versatility on offense. They're trying to find more guys that can rebound the ball with consistency. So I think that's important to point out. So I also think that plays into what the Wolves want to do defensively. So setting up the rest of the show here today, I want to get into, again, what Utah did, the coverages that they played specifically, and what I think the Wolves are going to do most of. So remember, this season the Timberwolves played, and by this season I mean the 21-22 season, the Timberwolves switched from previously playing a lot of drop, pick, and roll coverage, where Karl Anthony Towns or whoever was at center would essentially backpedal into the paint, allow penetration, try and contain penetration by the ball handler. And really what you're trying to do is not get beat downhill going to the rim. You're trying to essentially contain, right? But Towns wasn't great in that coverage. He would often sag too far. It's how D'Angelo Russell dropped 50 plus as a member of the Warriors against the Timberwolves. Kyrie Irving had a couple of 40 plus point games against the Wolves playing drop coverage. Mid-range shooters could eat the Wolves alive, and also players that could stop on a dime and shoot from three, like a Steph Curry. Obviously, Steph Curry eats everybody alive, but those types of players also give you difficulty in drop coverage. Not to mention Towns, for as athletic and good laterally as he is for his size, backpedaling was not great for him, not his forte, and it also lent itself to more foul trouble for Karl Anthony Towns. He wasn't great in drop coverage. He didn't understand exactly where to be. He would either sag too far, give up the mid-range jumper, play up too close, commit a foul, give up an and one, or he would be too close and just get beat. Somebody would get their shoulders past him. A quick guard would get a scoop shot at the rim, or, throw a lob pass or whatever that was, whatever happened in that scenario. It wasn't good for the Wolves. So last year, the Timberwolves moved back to playing a lot of high wall, where they were pick and roll coverage, where they were essentially either playing Karl Anthony Towns at the level of the screen, or at times they were even blitzing pick and roll, whether that was Towns or Vanderbilt or McDaniels. And it was largely successful, especially early in the year. The Timberwolves forced a ton of turnovers. They were number one in turnover rate for a good chunk of the season. I think top three in turnover rate defensively of the entire campaign. And it was because they used the length and athleticism of Vanderbilt, of McDaniels, of Patrick Beverley, of Anthony Edwards. And Towns was good in that sort of a coverage because in a very defined role, he's obviously big. And so, he can, obstruct the vision of a guard, help trap on the perimeter. That was largely successful until teams figured out that the solve was essentially anticipating the trap, getting a pass to the middle of the floor and or skipping all the way to the opposite corner. And if the Wolves didn't rotate fast enough, if the low man wasn't quick enough if they weren't Xing out on the perimeter, then opposing teams would get open corner threes or a dump down into the paint if the low man was, say, Malik Beasley or Jalen Noel or D'Angelo Russell. It's dunks all day, dunks in corner threes, right? Now, sloppy teams, impatient teams, poorly coached teams still fell victim to the Timberwolves trapping defense. That's why they still had a pretty good defense all year, really top 12, top 13. I think it finished 13th in defensive rating, if I'm not mistaken. So it was pretty good in the regular season, and it worked at times against Memphis in the playoffs. But as the year wore on and the defense was scouted, they weren't disciplined enough and they didn't have enough good defenders on the team. It was never 1 through 5 on the floor that were all the way in on playing this coverage really successfully, which I guess maybe that's not a fair way to say it, but they weren't always doing it right. Right. The well-coached teams, the other playoff teams, could largely exploit that if it's all the Wolves ran. So they tried to mix in a little bit of drop. They did some switching concepts. They mixed in a little bit of zone. Nothing worked as well as the high wall or his blitzing and trapping on the perimeter. So that was kind of their bread and butter last year. But with Rudy Gobert, they can do some different stuff. Now, it's well documented that what he did in the playoffs, or I should say what the Jazz did in the playoffs the past several seasons, was not successful. So why is that? I want to look at the differences between the Wolves and the Jazz in that regard and what different coverages the Wolves could try, what options they're going to have defensively this year. And Chris Finch is going to have multiple things he can try and deploy. And I think it's really fascinating. So we're going to get into that here next. First, let's talk about our friends over at BetOnline. BetOnline.net is your number one source for all your betting needs and sports info. You can find all the latest sports developments, league reviews, and news, including Major League Baseball. And believe it or not, you can find prop bets in the NBA offseason. I haven't checked in the last couple of days, but I know that there were prop bets on like where certain players would land. There was a Russell Westbrook. Where could he end up if not the Lakers? I believe the Oklahoma City Thunder were like first or second, which I thought was fascinating. So go check those out, because I think the prop bets are a ton of fun for off season. And I would imagine we're not too far from getting some win totals up there either for next season. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sport wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores. Plus, BetOnline.net remains the best spot for all your sports scores, podcasts, and news this season. BetOnline.net is the fastest and easiest way to check in on all your favorite sports and events, including MMA, boxing, golf, and more. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and action. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, so we talked a little bit about what the Wolves did defensively this year and what their favorite coverages were, what worked the best, which again is generally the high wall, you know, playing at the level of the screen, getting out on the perimeter, being aggressive, and guarding the pick and roll. Now, the Jazz largely played drop pick and roll coverage when Rudy Gobert was involved in the pick and roll, right? He would essentially drop, use his length to bother the player with the ball, and was, you know, was a good enough pick and roll defender. He's actually pretty decent in space, certainly for his size, Gobert is. But that was the preferred coverage, the length in the middle of the paint, in the middle of the paint and in the middle of the play, with the ball handler coming down at him, really towards him, really bothered opposing offenses. But when he wasn't involved in the pick and roll, and this happened often when opposing teams would try and, you know, manipulate things that they could try play five out, essentially most of the time. It's like what we saw the Clippers do. It was last year in Dallas, this year especially, to play five out, pull Gobert out of the paint, you know, onto kind of guarding, essentially his man would be the guy in the corner. So he'd be on the low block guarding the guy in the corner, play five out. If you could beat on the perimeter, if you could beat your man one-on-one in a five-out situation, essentially going, you know, isolation. So against Dallas, Jalen Brunson, if he could beat his man, you know, Donovan Mitchell or aged Mike Conley, or I don't know, Bogdanovich, you know, any of these guys that really struggled. Jordan Clarkson was probably the worst defender. Worst offender is what I tried to say of doing this, but worst defender too. Really bad. One of those guys on the perimeter, if they were beaten, if Jalen Brunson or whoever got their head and shoulders past the defender, Gobert has to rotate over and try and defend, and it's an easy kick into the corner. I think the one place, I'll say this, the one place where Gobert did struggle was sometimes it just, the want to didn't seem to be there to contest the shot in the corner, and you know, it's asking a lot of a guy to guard the paint and the perimeter. So I'm not laying all this at Rudy's feet, and that's exactly what I'm trying to say. There were some possessions where he could have contested in the corner a bit better. Far from the only guy to have that issue. I mean, there were times where Patrick Beverley did that last year, right? It's hard to do that on every play, but those are the ones that get cut up. They end up on SportsCenter and all your, you know, favorite and least favorite talking head shows. You know, Rudy's not trying. Rudy's not. Well, it's because Rudy can't guard the paint and the perimeter. That's the biggest problem, right? So eventually you get tired of, I'm guarding the paint and now I'm sprinting to the corner to try and contest a three. Rudy's actually really good at contesting jump shooters. But there comes a point when like, it's just not really his fault. So that was what other teams did, is they played five out because Utah didn't have any other good one-on-one defenders. They just didn't, like basically nobody. Royce O'Neal used to be good. He wasn't great last year. Bogdanovich had moments where he was solid defensively, but in general, there were always three or four bad individual defenders on the floor for Utah. The fact they had a top 10 defense is remarkable, and it's basically because of Rudy Gobert. No thanks to the coaching, no thanks to some of the other personnel on the floor. So Rudy was trying to cover for the sins of everybody else. Now, if teams go five out against the Wolves, and I'm sure they'll do this in the regular season, but absolutely in the playoffs, I mean, Jaden McDaniels is really tough to beat one-on-one, and you've also got the length of Anthony Edwards, who's always lurking, looking to intercept the pass. You've obviously still got Torian Prince, and Kyle Anderson is likely going to be a crunch time lineup type guy. You know, I don't know exactly what that crunch time lineup looks like. I mean, I guess who you're going to take off the floor, but one of McDaniels or Anderson is going to be on the floor. You could have both of them on the floor. If you want to have an ultra long lineup, maybe you get D'Lo off the floor and Ant's running point at the end of the game. I mean, you've got tons of possibilities, but Kyle Anderson's a plus defender. Torian Prince is in, and Anthony Edwards are in a similar category as switchable, pretty good on-ball defenders and really good team defenders. And then Jaden McDaniels is a plus on-the-ball defender. So you've already got far more good on-ball defenders than you did in Utah. So if teams try and do that and they go isolation, it's going to be really difficult. And it's going to be, by definition, that's stagnant offense for the opposition. So you want to play them into plain isolation, because then if they get past their guy, the other thing is you could still get broken down off the dribble and Gobert steps up to guard in the paint. But the thing Utah wasn't doing is they weren't Xing out on the perimeter. The next guy in their rotation was not sprinting to the corner to contest the three by, you know, Maxi Kleber or whoever's just raining threes on you in whatever particular series. That was because Utah's defense was so bad, besides Gobert, that the initial point of attack defender was getting beat. The rotational defender that was supposed to X out to the corner and contest the jumper wasn't doing their job. So Gobert was literally doing both jobs. That was the biggest issue. It's not because he was played off the floor. It's because the rest of the defenders for Utah could not handle themselves. And the way that Utah defended non-Gobert pick and rolls, when Gobert was not involved in a pick and roll on their perimeter, because the offense would manipulate it so that Gobert wouldn't be, is Utah was trying to hedge and recover. And I mean, there's a lot of, we see less teams doing that now, but it's generally a common way to defend the pick and roll. But Utah just bungled it so much of the time that guys running into each other, not recovering fast enough, overplaying the wrong hand. And whenever Gobert wasn't involved in the pick and roll, Utah was just destroyed. And when they played five out, Utah was destroyed because Gobert was trying to guard the paint and guard the corners. It wasn't a recipe for success. And if you just want to talk numbers, the on-off numbers, the Jazz were better with Gobert on the floor in the playoffs than they were with him off the floor. So you could say all you want that he was played off the floor. Okay, if he was, they were worse when he was off the floor. So I guess what that tells me is the depth of the team was poor. The coaching at times was poor. Obviously, Quinn Snyder did a good job there over 8 years. But I mean, clearly they, as an organization, had decided to not put other good defenders around them. It was a calculated decision, basically, to say, well, Gobert, we'll add a Royce O'Neal, we'll add a couple guys that can defend. And, you know, Gobert does enough to make us a top 10 defense. We'll make the playoffs and probably win in the first round, which wasn't the case this year. And, you know, then we'll see what happens beyond that. But you add Gobert to a team that was already in the top half of the league, you know, top 12, 13 defense, plus Gobert, this should be a top five defense. And I want to get to next what I think the Wolves could do, a couple of different ways that they could choose to defend this year. But I wanted to lay the groundwork here, or I guess lay the baseline for what Utah messed up, right? The hedge and recover didn't work for non-Gobert pick and rolls. In Gobert pick and rolls, when he was playing drop, he was a good defender. When opposing teams went five out, it generally wasn't Gobert's fault. Short of a few short contests in the corners, it was more because the point of attack defenders were broken down. The rotational defender did not X out to the corner fast enough, and that was that. And then Gobert's the one that looks like he's, you know, oh, I got to be here. No, I got to be there. And he's a step late on the contest because he's doing both things at once. Without Gobert on the floor, the Jazz were a non-playoff defense. They were bottom five defense. In the regular season, with Gobert off the floor, the Jazz had a bottom five defense. Already, Jaden McDaniels, Kyle Anderson, Torian Prince, Anthony Edwards, all better defenders than the vast majority of guys seen rotational minutes for the Jazz last season, the last two, three seasons. Even D'Angelo Russell's a better defender than Jordan Clarkson. I mean, there's no other way about it than to just simply say Gobert plus good defenders is going to be a lot better than Gobert with bad defenders. I don't know how else to describe this. But I do want to, like I said, I want to get into what I think the Wolves can do this year, what I think they'll try and do defensively with Gobert and Towns on the floor, likely a lot of the time together. So I want to get into that here next. First, let's talk about our friends over at Rock Auto. This episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing the only brand that their warehouse happens to carry? You have a computer with access to rockauto.com, both at home and in your pocket. You can save time and money when using Rock Auto. Why would you spend 30, 50, even 100% more for the same parts from a chain store or car dealership? Rock Auto is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years, and their prices are reliably low for every single customer. They have everything you could possibly need, from brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, to even new carpet. Go explore their easy-to-use website today to find the solution to your auto part needs. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Right, Locked On, their How Did You Hear About Us box, so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. So I went on the Locked On NBA show and talked with Jackson Gatlin, who's also the host of Locked On Rockets, does a fantastic job. But I was one of the segments on the Locked On NBA show today on Monday the 4th, so go check that out if you haven't. One of the questions he asked me was related to Towns defensively and some of the issues Towns has had defending overall and how the Wolves would manage to he didn't say the word hide, but basically how are they going to manage? Is he going to be the weak link now? And if you've listened to this show, I've talked quite a bit about what the Wolves did this year differently. I talked earlier in this show today, this episode, about playing high wall and getting Towns out on the perimeter instead of leaving him back, you know, in drop coverage or asking him to protect the rim, because those are not his fortes. You play to his strengths, right? The Wolves did that. They asked Jared Vanderbilt to protect the rim as best he could. Some of the problems there were this last year. The Wolves' defensive rebounding was miserable all season. It was a big problem when it came to their defense. Because Towns was often out on the perimeter, that's where he was assigned to be, right? So it was left to Vando and then the guards and wings to crash down and help rebound and Towns when possible. And it wasn't a good recipe. So what the Wolves will do this year, they'll have a couple of options, but if Towns and Gobert are on the floor, I mean, Gobert grabbed a quarter of all available rebounds when he was on the floor last year. He had a 25% rebound rate. One in every four shots missed with Rudy Gobert on the floor, either side of the floor, you know, total 25%. Were rebounded by Rudy Gobert. Karl-Anthony Towns had his worst rebound year in terms of percentage and per game of his career last year. It was still good, but we know that there's more in there. Again, a lot of it was because he was defending pick and roll out on the perimeter. He wasn't in the same position to rebound. And now the Wolves are going to have the option to try multiple different things, right? They could continue to trap, could continue to play high wall on the perimeter with Karl-Anthony Towns doing what he does best. And this is what I said to Jackson on Locked On NBA today, is Gobert then becomes your low man, essentially, right? I mean, previously it was Vanderbilt or whoever ended up back there because of all the switching that the other team was forcing, that the offense was forcing. Now Gobert could just hang there and protect the paint. I mean, he essentially roams the back line, roams the baseline, and can contest in the corners. He can protect the paint. And we've seen him be a one-man wrecking crew for years now at the NBA level. It's the reason he's a three-time defensive player of the year, because people don't want to challenge him. So they could keep doing what they were doing, but then replace Vanderbilt with Gobert. And that's pretty good. Or if you don't want Cat in pick and roll, say he's picked up two fouls in the first quarter and you know, you're late first quarter, early second quarter, you don't want him in the pick and roll, you're trying to protect him, you get him out, you know, get him switched out of the pick and roll, and you could decide to play drop. Or if Towns off the floor and Gobert's in the game, you could play drop, pick, and roll, which is what Gobert's really good at. Or you could even play him at the level of the screen, too. I mean, you could do some similar stuff with Gobert as you do with Cat. But Gobert's so good at drop that there's really, you know, no need to overcomplicate things. It may be as simple as, hey, Cat, if you're in the pick and roll, you know, you're trapping or you're playing high wall, you're playing at the level of the screen. Gobert, if you're in the pick and roll, you're dropping. It may be that simple. My one concern, well, actually, I'll get to that in a second. But Towns, so that's Towns's wheelhouse, right? Is playing high wall coverage, is being aggressive on the perimeter. And if you're worried about foul trouble, that's not when he picked up a lot of fouls. He did occasionally. He'd jump out and he'd do this thing. You know, he'd jump out to play defense and he'd kind of stick his hip out. He got a couple of those, a couple tripping calls, things like that. But for the most part, he was still picking up cheapies on offense, offensive fouls, and you know sometimes on the glass, frustration fouls. Usually wasn't guarding in pick and roll coverage. So I trust Towns in that regard. But going back to what I said about the Jazz, is the Jazz didn't have the flexibility to do different things. They just played drop when Gobert was in it, and then they tried to hedge and recover, and they didn't have the personnel to do that either. The Wolves could play drop with Gobert. They could play high wall with Towns. They could play at the level with Gobert. They could just always leave Towns, you know, on the baseline, essentially protecting the paint. I mean, the options are fairly endless for Chris Finch, and we'll talk more about this in regard to offense. But he was a offensive coordinator essentially in New Orleans, which, again, we're talking about defense, but still, he was in New Orleans on the coaching staff when Gobert and, not Gobert, DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis were together with the Pelicans. He was in Denver for a season when Yusuf Nurkic played with Nikola Jokic. So he knows how to play two bigs together. He's done that before internationally, and he's going to cook something up defensively. And my guess is they're just going to rotate through all these different things. Remember last, February, March, April, when the Wolves were trying to get ready for the playoffs, and they started rotating through some different coverages. They started switching more often, which I don't think Finch likes to do, and I don't think they'll do a ton of this year. But they're going to have these other things they can go to in certain situations. Or say Towns is in foul trouble and Gobert needs a rest, and then Naz Reid's in the game, or Nate Knight's your center. You're going to do something a little bit different with those guys than you would with Gobert and Towns. And so to have that flexibility on the roster, to have guys who can guard multiple positions and use their length, like Kyle Anderson and Torian Prince, and Wendell Moore Jr. too, by the way. I don't think he's going to be a rotation guy, but if he's your 11th guy and eventually he finds his way in the rotation, he's theoretically a versatile defender guarding multiple positions as well. That's a really good thing to be able to do. I started to say a minute ago, and this is another thing I talked to Jackson about on Locked On NBA, a Monday show, is my one concern would be if teams do play five out, and then they find whoever Towns is guarding, and that person attacks, that opposing player attacks. For A, Towns is a good defender. He's a pretty good individual defender, but if he's playing the four, by default, a lot of times he's going to match up with a player that's as quick or quicker than him. And if he gets beat off the dribble, you're exposing yourself to, obviously, a bucket, Gobert stepping up, and if you don't recover on the backside fast enough, the ball swings to the corner, boom, open three. Or you're getting Gobert in foul trouble because somebody's coming downhill with a head of steam. Or you're getting Cat in foul trouble because he's getting blown by, or he's, getting a blocking foul or doing whatever it is Cat does when he gets stuck in space sometimes. So that's my concern. I think five out would still be a way to potentially give the Wolves with Gobert and Towns on the floor a hard time if you hunt the matchup with Towns and you try and make Gobert make a choice. Now, if on the backside you have Jaden McDaniels rotating to the corner, he's fast enough, long enough, smart enough, athletic enough to do that more successfully than Bogdanovich or Jordan Clarkson or insert bad Jazz defender here. If you have Anthony Edwards on the backside, he's going to jump that passing lane and snare your skip pass to the corner and head back the other way or throw one of his, he compared himself to Donovan McNabb on the social media video last week when he was throwing bombs. He's going to throw a three-quarters court pass to a streaking Jaden McDaniels on the other wing for a dunk or something like that if he picks off that pass. So I think the Wolves have the length, they have the athletes, they have the intelligent defenders, and hopefully the scheme to be able to make this work. But that would be the one, I think, Achilles heel, is if they get stuck in five out and teams attack at Towns, then you find yourself in a similar situation to Utah. But again, hopefully with the athletes to be able to recover on the backside and not get beat in the open floor. So that's kind of it's basically my 30 minutes on what I like about this move from a defensive perspective, how I think Gobert is going to fit, options the Wolves have. I want to do a show like this on offense as well later this week. I also want to get to Summer League. The first Summer League game is this Friday night for the Wolves. And of course, the roster looks a little different than we thought it did when I first recorded last Friday's show. No Walker Kessler, of course. He's no longer a member of the Wolves. So we'll look at the roster, talk about names you should know as you get ready for Summer League this Friday. So more Gobert coverage throughout the week. Of course, the Wolves still have a couple roster spots to fill. So we'll do a segment at some point, probably Tuesday, about how many roster spots are left, what's the cap space look like, who are possible adds to fill out the roster. Could there be, are they looking for another big? Do they need another point guard? And then at some point, there will be another move or two. So we'll talk about that once it happens. So a packed week as we get ready for Summer League. Again, we are daily throughout the month of July, still Monday through Friday. So be sure you're following and subscribed wherever you listen to podcasts. And a big thank you if you do make Locked On Wolves your first listen every day. Of course, you can watch on YouTube. You can listen on Apple, Google, Spotify, Odyssey, any app you can find this show. You can also follow on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves and at BBeacon with two Bs, two Es, CK. A reminder that the Locked On Wolves podcast is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on all the biggest stories. A reminder that for your second listen, you can get up to date on the latest news and rumors in the NBA in just 30 minutes every day, Monday through Friday with Locked On NBA. I mentioned I was on the show Monday, so go ahead and listen to that episode. Locked On NBA is your daily NBA update in just 30 minutes. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.